Coming up is the news.
The headlines: an outpouring of grief in the occupied West Bank, where Palestinians are mourning the victims of the latest Israeli bloodshed. Lebanon's parliament fails to elect a new president for the ninth time, amid growing concerns about the economic consequences of the deadlock. And employees at the U.S. daily newspaper, The New York Times, walk off their jobs over a wage dispute, the first such industrial action in over four decades.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
More bloodshed in the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces have killed three Palestinians during another raid that they conducted hours ago. The Israeli military stormed into the Jenin refugee camp early on Thursday. Several other Palestinians have been injured. Authorities in the Jenin governorate have declared a day of public mourning to commemorate the tragedy. Meanwhile, the resistance movement Hamas has reacted by saying the Israeli crimes will only make Palestinians more resolute in their resistance. Regime forces have on numerous occasions attacked the Flashpoint camp as part of a crackdown on Palestinian fighters and their families. So far this year, the military attacks have claimed the lives of well above 200 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. Here's Mona Kandil, a correspondent from Ramallah, with the latest about the latest deadly encounter in the occupied West Bank.
Israeli forces have raided another Palestinian area in the occupied West Bank. Early Thursday, Israeli troops raided Jenin city northern the occupied West Bank and its refugee camp. According to the Israeli military, the aim of the operation was to arrest Palestinians accused of being wanted for security reasons, accused by the Israeli forces of taking part in anti-Israel activities, different forms of resistance. But as usual, raiding the refugee camp of Jenin means that the clashes would be taking place because the residents there, Palestinian fighters there, would not accept for the Israeli forces to enter easily. Clashes took place between Palestinians there and Israeli soldiers that led to the killing of three Palestinians, Sutqi, Zakarne, Ata Shalabi, and Tariq, at damage from Jenin refugee camp and from Qabatia. According to our sources there, the three who were killed were not wanted by the Israeli forces. Two of them were already heading to their work, while they were surprised by the Israeli troops and military bulldozer inside the refugee camp, whom immediately soldiers opened fire in cold, killing people in cold blood and wounded a number of them.
Lebanon's parliament once again fails to elect a new president amid a political deadlock, raising fears that the current economic crisis may worsen. Lawmaker Michel Mouawad failed again to gain the 86 votes needed to secure the position of president. Mouawad was also nominated for presidential candidacy last week. This is the ninth round parliament has cast votes to elect the head of state. Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri has reiterated calls for dialogue among lawmakers to find a consensus on a new head of state. Lebanon is struggling with an economic meltdown. Its currency is in a free fall, causing a host of issues, including severe electricity shortages and soaring poverty rates. Mariam Saleh is a correspondent joining us from Beirut to tell us more about this. Well, Mariam, at this point, tell us what you can about what has occurred. And if you can tell us a little bit about what we mentioned in the news about Mouawad, who he is, and what is the deal with him when it comes to the voting that has taken place.
Yes, well, many are calling him the Saudi card or the U.S. card, as you mentioned. This is a figure that is not new in politics. His father was the president of the of Lebanon, although his father was considered a consensus president then, but now he has taken the side of the 14th of March alliance that was very much against the resistance. If we're talking about the year 2005, during the year 2005, his mother was a member of parliament then. She was very much at the forefront of the fight against those who are with Syria, with the resistance and so on. And then later on, after she left political life and she handed it down to her son, he played the same role, basically, as being someone who was very close to those who are in the former March 14th Alliance. We don't really have a March 14th Alliance anymore, but they are basically the same groups. You have the Falangist Party, you have the Lebanese Forces Party led by Samir Jaja, and you have that group, and now you have other groups also aligning themselves with them, whether Sunni or Christian. And so this is why it seems that this person is being pushed as a candidate who represents that side. And up until now, he has not succeeded in getting not just two-thirds of the votes, even in the second round where you only need 65 votes out of 128, he did not even get that. So basically, the votes that he is getting are less even than what the blank paper is getting. So what we see here is that those who are pro-resistance, the allies of Hezbollah, they are the ones who are voting with a blank sheet because they believe that we do not have a consensus president. We do not have an agreement as Lebanese together, as Lebanese factions, and so on. Although the Speaker of the Parliament, Mr. Nabih Berri, has called for dialogue sessions that would be on the sideline of the election sessions that, of course, have to be held constitutionally, although everybody knows that there will not be an election of a president until there is a consensus. Despite that, they still have to meet and they have to put in papers, even if they are blank sheets. So with all this, the speaker is stressing that we need to meet maybe on the sidelines. Let's not hold a session. The other group is insisting, the group which is electing Muawad, Shah Muawad, they are insisting that, no, we will always attend and put in the same votes, although they understand, and it's very clear that this is a standoff, that they will reach nowhere. They would not have enough votes to get their candidate to win the presidency. And the other side as well, they're saying, we're not saying that we can have a president alone, even those who are allies with Hezbollah. We need to come together and find a candidate who is consensus. And though you have a lot of voices that are saying that a consensus president would probably not resolve the crises in the country, and that is another issue. So you have the Lebanese basically in a state where they don't need more complications. The things are being more complicated when it comes to electing a president. And even on the economic sector, things are getting worse. The price of the dollar is increasing more than it has before. You have the socioeconomic crisis. You have many of the laborers, the teachers, the university professors, all threatening and warning that they will go on strike if their salaries are not met. Although the salaries, of course, are almost worth nothing when it comes to the price of the dollar because they are paid in Lebanese lira. So with all of that, you have the crisis of the election of a president. So what we're seeing here is basically an internal problem that would probably be the result of some foreign problems. When you have issues, for example, in the region and abroad, it has always reflected on Lebanon. When you have the Saudis, for example, they have issues with Hezbollah, they have issues with the resistance, then therefore they will try to put that against Lebanon. The U.S. has put, of course, a lot of economic pressure.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mariam Saleh there from Beirut. Thank you. Moving on with the news. Employees at the New York Times are going through the first strike in more than four decades. Over 1,100 staff, including prominent journalists of the U.S. daily newspaper, have walked off the job for 24 hours, starting at midnight Thursday. The News Guild of New York is the union representing the striking workers. It says the work stoppage was organized after the company failed to reach an agreement with the staff on a new round of contract negotiations. The major sticking point being the management's refusal to raise salaries in line with America's surging inflation. But the newspaper spokesperson says it is disappointing to see the staff taking an extreme action when the talks have not reached a deadlock. And staying with the U.S., the Democratic Party has won a runoff vote for the final Senate seat, giving it a slim 51-49 majority. However, with Republicans winning the House of Representatives last month, Congress will be divided for the next 2 years. Many expect bitter partisan divides will now become even worse. Ramin Mazari has more from Chicago.
A month after going to the polls, the results of the United States midterms are finally known. The Democratic Party has narrowly won a runoff vote in the state of Georgia, meaning they will retain control of the upper house of Congress, but with a mere 51-49 edge over Republicans.
They've come up with things that are going to help a larger block of people. Conversely, the Republicans are just pushing back and creating exclusionary, not even policy, but just exclusionary commentary. So Republicans are going to make all these crazy claims. And I'm not being partisan. I'm just saying that's what they said they're going to do.
However, over the past 2 years, a small faction of right-leaning Democrats was enough to consistently torpedo the legislation of President Joe Biden. Celebrations are further tempered by the fact that Republicans won control of the lower House of Representatives, meaning Congress is now divided.
A divided Congress means that the United States is facing 2 years of political gridlock, with each party voting down the other's legislation, and then capped by an extremely tense presidential election in 2024.
Just like in the years 2000, 2004, 2016, and 2020, there have been widespread complaints about the integrity of the nation's elections. Much of the Democrats' loss can be traced to disillusionment and disinterest from African American and youth voters, whose turnout dropped to an estimated 35% and 27%, respectively.
I would say I'm not hearing too much about it. I'm 19, so I might be part of it. My friends probably aren't just talking about it very much. I think they're probably just too distracted, and they maybe think it doesn't affect them enough for it to matter to them. However, it certainly should, because it can affect them maybe later in life.
Many are now lamenting that the Democrats didn't do enough to win over the average voter during the 2 years they controlled both the White House and Congress, as they remained focused on the era of ex-President Donald Trump instead. Now that they have the subpoena power, Republicans are looking for payback, meaning an even worse era of partisanship will likely be inaugurated on January 3rd. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
There are now more food banks in the UK than there are McDonald's. Soaring inflation and energy price hikes are forcing more Britons to rely on food aid to avoid starvation. And with the cold season already here, charities are warning things are going to take a turn for the worse for millions of Britons. Saeed Puriza has more.
Doors at food banks across the UK are seeing more people come through now than ever before, as food and energy costs rise. Beans, noodles, and fruit. Food packaged up for people in crisis, not in the developing world, but in northwest London.
This is one of the thousands of centres across the UK. All this food is sorted, packaged, and distributed by the volunteers here to people who desperately need them. Without them, they go hungry.
In the queue outside, Sarah, who asked her face not to be shown, told us she'd go days without food so her three children could eat.
I go days without eating as long as they get fed. I can go days without it. I can do it, but it's them I'm concerned. It's worrying for me for them to go without food. But I can go without food for a couple of days or so, just eat, drink milk, hot chocolate, yogurts and stuff, so they can have a full meal. Like, everything I have, it's all for them. So, you know, it is difficult.
This independent charity provides aid to 800 food bank users. And with the UK's economic downturn making the poor even poorer, they're warning more people will be knocking on their doors.
According to the government's new budget, benefits will be increasing in line with inflation, but that's not until April. So that means our guests will continue to struggle throughout the winter for the next few months, throughout the rain and snow and cold weather.
These bags only offer days of help, but that too could be under threat. Food banks are now at breaking point, due to a tsunami of need driven by the cost of living crisis. Charities estimate more than 2 million people in Britain now depend on food aid. For now, help is around, with those in need hoping the country's economic outlook improves. The question is how long that will take. Saeed Puriza, London.
A group of European countries, including Germany and the Netherlands, have warned about attempts to further lower gas prices. This as the European Union is negotiating a cap to limit Russia's ability to finance its war in Ukraine. The group, also including Austria, Denmark, Estonia, and Luxembourg, argues that lowering the prices further would disrupt the normal functioning of Europe's energy market. Belgium, Italy, Poland, and Greece are among the countries backing a price cap. They say that it is needed to shield their economies from high gas costs. They want a far lower price limit than the one proposed by the European Commission. They have already agreed on $231 per megawatt hour, but that is expected to be revised further before a deal is reached. European countries, along with some G7 nations, have also placed a $60 price limit on Russian oil. However, Moscow says it has come up with a mechanism to respond to the price caps. Eutelsat has informed Press TV of plans to suspend its services to the Iranian broadcaster. The European satellite operator says the potential move is in line with the EU sanctions targeting Iranian individuals and entities, including Press TV, over Iran's response to the recent riots.
Eutelsat is a French satellite operator providing coverage over the entire European continent, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. It's the world's third largest satellite operator in terms of revenues. The decision came weeks after the European Union imposed sanctions on Iran's English language news network. The move was part of recent sanctions by the European Union, which were imposed on Iran after the recent riots there. The bloc has sanctioned 29 individuals and three organizations, including Press TV. It has accused the Iranian news channel of airing, quote, forced confessions of detainees. Press TV has rejected those claims.
I've been working here at Press TV for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that Press TV has not aired any confessions whatsoever, forced or unforced. So that shows you how such decisions by the EU and the like are based on unfounded claims with no basis in reality. And these sanctions on Press TV I see as part of the media war and their narrative control. They want to present the war with their distorted version of what's going on in Iran these days, and seemingly they don't feel much comfortable with Press TV challenging their narrative. So they would try everything to silence us or make us less heard, but we're not going to be silenced.
IRIB chief Peyman Jebelli has strongly condemned EU's move, saying that it's not the first time the West has acted against its own claims of being the defender of the freedom of expression. Sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. Press TV has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media concerning the recent riots in Iran.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Shanghai, the last day of November. Former Chinese President Jiang Zemin died at the age of 96 from leukemia and organ failure. The ruling Communist Party issued a joint letter to the Chinese people, praising him as an outstanding leader of high prestige, a great statesman, military strategist and diplomat, and a long-tested communist fighter. Jiang Zemin became China's leader after the bloody 1989 Tiananmen Square protests.
I don't regret. I don't think I did anything wrong. But if the question is, would I do it again? That I don't know, because it involves in people, you know, lost their life, and it will be a much difficult question for me.
The events saw China ostracized internationally and triggered a power struggle at the top of the Communist Party between hardliners and reformers. Jiang was chosen then as a compromised leader to unify the two opposing sides. The mainstream Western media outlets did not express high hopes for Jiang's succession, assuming he would be a mere traditional figure, but he proved them wrong. As Jiang took the helm, the country was in bad shape, both economically and politically. Foreign investment had dried up as Western capitals imposed sanctions on China in the wake of the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests. Over the subsequent years, Jiang presided over some highly symbolic movements, one of them the smooth handover of Hong Kong in 1997, when the city returned to Chinese sovereignty from British colonial rule. Also sought a peaceful reunion with Taiwan under the One Country, Two Systems policy, while adopting independent and peaceful foreign policies. He tried to modernize China's military with the aim of strengthening national security. Meanwhile, Jiang deepened China's integration with the global economy by joining the World Trade Organization in 2001, what set the country on the right track to grow economically. The Chinese leader oversaw his country's relations with the United States through a series of crises, including America's 1999 bombing of the Chinese embassy in the Serbian capital Belgrade during the fighting over Kosovo. And a deadly collision between the Chinese and American warplane that killed a Chinese pilot in southern China in 2001. The Belgrade bombing killed three Chinese nationals and caused a wave of anti-U.S. protests in China. Days after the bombing, and despite the strong pressure of nationalistic public opinion in China, Jiang asked his fellow Chinese leaders to focus on economic development and sleep on brushwood and taste the gall, a Chinese phrase meaning to put up with insult and focus on the long-term goal. He took a similar pragmatic path in domestic politics as he formally allowed the country's private business owners to join the party for the first time. Years into his leadership, Jiang managed to push his political theory, known as the Three Represents, now enshrined in the constitution of the party and the state. The Three Represents refers to the party representing China's most advanced productive forces, the orientation of China's advanced culture, and the fundamental interests of the overwhelming majority of the Chinese people. In the words of Zhu Zhikan, a professor of political science and international relations at Bucknell University in Pennsylvania, the Three Represents was significant
since it opened the door for entrepreneurs or capitalists to join the CCP, which fundamentally transformed the CCP from a party for the working class to a party for people for all walks of life. Perhaps Jiang's most striking achievement in office, first as General Secretary of the ruling Communist Party, and then as President, was the manner he left office. He retired peacefully in the first orderly transfer of political power in China since Mao Zedong's 1949 Communist Revolution. Jiang gave up his last senior post, chairman of the party's Central Military Commission, in 2004, completing the transition to Hu Jintao as president and party leader. Rarely seen in public since then, Jiang made an appearance at the opening ceremony of the Beijing Olympics in 2008, an event he had played a key role in securing for China. Jiang remained influential in Chinese politics, re-emerging in 2012 as once again the question of the leadership succession was being debated. His absence from the 20th Communist Party Congress in October this year was seen as a sign of declining health. Thanks to Jiang's pragmatism, the Communist Party was entrenched as China's only political force, open to the budding private business sector, and yet protected from all direct challenges to its monopoly on power. Jiang considered democracy as a Western import unsuited to China. For him, one-party rule was not so much a matter of Marxist ideology as the guarantor of China's future prosperity. His signature slogan was "Stability overrides everything." The party under Jiang resembled, at least in its goals, the ruling parties of capitalist Asian nations in the 1960s and 1970s. Jiang Zemin will be remembered for presiding over a decade of breakneck economic growth and rising prosperity in China as it mended fences with the West and became a global superpower.
Hidden Files.
Around 2 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, November 28, 1953, something rather strange happened at a New York City hotel. A scientist got up in the middle of the night, ran across a dark room, avoiding two beds, and dove through a closed window with the shades and curtains down, then died soon after he hit the ground. His name was Frank Olson, and his death would help uncover a series of secret CIA operations involving the lives of thousands. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today's mind-blowing topic is a CIA mind control project called MKUltra. The story of MKUltra is at times so surreal that one may think it's the plot of a science fiction movie, but unfortunately, it is very much true and affected thousands of people around the world, although no one is sure of the actual numbers because of the secrecy of the program. It was a Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, top secret program, which used humans as guinea pigs to test a range of drugs that could force confessions or brainwash individuals through various forms of psychological torture. Well, you see, in the 1950s, the CIA initiated this program to experiment with forms of mind control in order to, and I quote, to catch up with the Soviets and Chinese advances in the field. 80 institutions and 185 private researchers had contracts with the CIA to perform this work, and they were located around the world, as were their victims. So Sidney Gottlieb was the CIA's main man handling this project. He was a chemist, and some of his experiments were covertly funded at universities and research centers. Others were conducted in American prisons and in detention centers in Japan, Germany, and the Philippines. Now, according to journalist Stephen Kenzer, Gottlieb wanted to create a way to seize control of people's minds, and he realized that it was a two-part process. Well, first, you had to blast away, imagine that, blast away the existing mind. Second, you had to find a way to insert a new mind into that resulting void. According to Kenzer, the United States didn't get too far on number two, but they did a lot of work on number one. There were a core group of scientists around the world who were part of MKUltra. LSD, sleep deprivation, and electric shock treatments were their favorite tools to use on their victims, but it was not limited to those. They would induce people into a high with putting them into having hallucinations, then giving them a drug to bring them down, and while in between these phases, some of them would give their victims many electric shock treatments, basically having people lose their minds.
This is where I have my effect. In the mind.
This is lysergic acid diethylamide, better known as acid. The powerful drug was first synthesized in 1938 in Switzerland. With a dose of mere micrograms, the mind becomes confused. Perception is distorted. Personal identity is called into question. The results can be euphoric bliss or deadly panic.
So that was how LSD was introduced to this country.
Operation Midnight Climax is part of a larger top-secret CIA program called MKUltra. The goal, learn how to control and even reprogram people's minds. The CIA believes LSD might hold the key. Over the next 10 years, the agency doses a cross-section of the American public. Everyone from unwitting housewives to soldiers to even criminals like gangster Whitey Bulger is tested.
You know, what the CIA really dreamed of was sort of like a drug you could give to someone, get them to commit all sorts of unspeakable acts, and they wake up the next day and they don't remember what they've done.
They were looking into brainwashing. They were looking into mind control. They were looking into how they could create what they called Manchurian candidates. They were trying to figure out if they could get people to go out and do things that they would ordinarily not do, like assassinations.
The case of MKUltra has to be one of the craziest cases of blowback in CIA history, because here they took this drug, LSD, and thought that they were going to be able to use it to control people's minds. And the unbelievable irony is that LSD is a drug that does exactly the opposite. It frees your mind and causes people to question authority.
Turn on, tune in, drop out. The CIA's attempt to control people turned out to be just the opposite. It created the counterculture, as we know it, of the 60s. It was the CIA that introduced LSD to the United States.
So not only was the goal of this program brainwashing, but also reprogramming to get the victim to do anything the CIA wanted, even assassinations. And without the victim having the slightest memory of what he had done. The United States was concerned during the Korean War, where many American prisoners of war were confessing to the Koreans that they had actually used germ warfare on their country and were apologetic. Over 7,000 POWs petitioned the U.S. to end the war, and 21 of the soldiers even refused to return to the United States after the war. Well, Washington thought all of this was because of brainwashing techniques, which they thought had been used on the soldiers, but that was not the case. However, it did not prevent the U.S. from starting this aggressive and inhumane program to learn how to control humans by brainwashing them. Officially, the MKUltra program ended when information started seeping out after Olson's case was finally looked into. You know, he was the guy I introduced to you at the beginning of the program, the scientist who was set up to look like he committed suicide, but were most likely killed by the same CIA that he had worked for. It seemed that after he was given an LSD dosage that he had a bit of a conscience and couldn't take the torture to others any longer. And Gottlieb and others, even higher up, knew that he needed to be silenced before he exposed what they were doing. Much about this program came to light 20 years after Olson's death, and because of the public exposure, the program was officially ended. However, there are those who say it never really ended, but just took on other forms. Let's get my guests involved in this discussion.
James Martinez is a media ecologist, radio talk show host, and pioneer in radio broadcasting and behavior modification. Born in San Diego, California, he's an accredited member of the Press for American Media Distribution. Martinez has been a consultant for True TV's Conspiracy Theory and has consulted for Emmy Award-winning actor Ian Bailey for a show entitled Imagine This.
Well, thank you so much, James, for being with us. I'd like to start off with this. How would you describe MKUltra to our audience?
MKUltra was brought over from Europe during World War II, where they were perfecting behavior modification using child abuse and satanic cult ritual. Those were the melting pots for what was to be used. Originally, most people think MKUltra had to do with being able to utilize behavioral software to override the conscious mind of an individual that was pre-programmed for instance, assassination. But it wasn't only for assassination. It was used for political purposes as well. And it was done through ritualistic abuse originally. That's how it started. These ritual abuse techniques were used to create deep-seated trauma within the psyche, and then around the trauma, build and program personalities for certain functions to be used. MKUltra, originally, what people know it from is being able to take the free will of an individual, any individual, and get them to commit murder without them knowing it or even remembering it, and carrying it out skillfully and discreetly so that it can be utilized for political purposes, for altering the chessboard pieces on the grand chessboard, so to speak. That's what it was for originally, but it has far more profound effects today.
I mean, that's really mind-boggling what you said. How successful would you say that program was?
Very successful. Very successful. In 1990, when I was working with Walter Boehrert, we had and interviewed hundreds of people that survived ritualistic satanic abuse. Some were in the private sector, some were in the military, and some were utilized in Vietnam for assassination. And Walter Boehrert originally, what inspired him to write the book was discovery of deep-seated amnesia with a lot of the soldiers that came back from Vietnam. And he was always very sensitive to the whole idea of warfare as a whole. But what he really, really was concerned about was the battle over the mind. And we knew in 1990 that that's where the high ground was and the end of the road. And we've reached that now. We knew in 1990 that free will, freedom of speech, and cognitive liberty would be the biggest issues on the planet. And this today is where we're at, because we are now in the process of merging our central nervous system to technology. And this is, we're at a very, very dangerous place for the whole human race at this point.
Well, besides the drugs used in the MKUltra program, I saw in an earlier interview that you had done, you talked about child abuse techniques also used. Can you expand on that for me?
When you have individuals in society that get off on having power over others as a mechanism of an effect of satisfaction to the psyche. Most of the time, it's because they're disassociated from previous childhood that they experienced as a youngster. Whether it was sanctioned by the government or done through a program, these type of individuals come into power, and then what ends up happening is they have no empathy or even feeling for anything outside of themselves, because they've been fractured themselves. And everybody has heard the term, you know, those that have been abused abuse. And this is what we have today. And it was weaponized, MK Ultra, and all the programs associated with it, MK Naomi and all the others, were utilized against the public to capture America and then the world.
Well, you just mentioned about mind control techniques transcending. And you've also said about the role technology plays in all of this, technology and media. Let's talk about this a little bit. What do you mean exactly?
Marshall McLuhan wrote Understanding Media. He spoke before the Bilderbergs and most powerful people in the world on the effects of technology on human perception. And this is a very important piece of the puzzle in understanding mind control, is being understand the what's known today as media ecology, which is the study of human perception and its marriage to technology. And we knew in the early 90s when they began to outer the inner, that's it's called, of the central nervous system outside of the body via the computer, the media extension of our central nervous system, our handheld computers, that was the beginning of the end. And human perception would be altered forever because of that, all of which was planned by DARPA and the military industrial complex quite some time ago. So if people are trying to understand how this functions, they really need to study the works of Marshall McLuhan and other media theorists in the communications field, so they understand how human perception is altered through media environments, such as the television, the book, the computer, any media extension of the human psyche alters it. And they're aware of that. All the intelligence agencies were all told this in the 50s. They figured it all out, and they slowly utilized technology to alter and steer obsolescence and human perception and attention span, because now we're in an attention economy. And that's been offset by the amplification of our central nervous system to put us into an anticipation state all the time of receiving a text, receiving a message, receiving. And this is ADHD is an effect of the post-information environment and the computer, which we spoke about in Operation Mind Control.
I mean, if what you're saying is true in your perspective, what can be done to counter these measures?
It's incredibly damaging. I have kind of stayed away from a lot of the news, as I did a media fast by design to unplug myself from everything. And that's what you need to do to have contrast and being able to survive in a post-information environment where everything now is inverted, information's moving at the speed of light, everything changes every second, human perception is being engineered and designed, and we've got the birth of the cybernetic being now, which is completely, totally different than what was previously there 5-10 years ago. We have different humans now. The days of the organic biological entity that we call a human being, it's gone. It's been re-engineered. Now it's being done genetically. So mind control now is not just taking over the mind, it's taking over the entire biology of an individual and re-engineering it for either extermination or for some policy to support the state. So the most important not discussed issue of our time right now is the liberation of the human condition and what it is to be human, because a lot of us don't know anymore, because we've been so damaged by the technology that's been inserted into the public. I mean, you've spoken to enough people and watched culture close enough yourself to see that what's been done to our children just by the interfacing of technology in their development years. What, you know, a lot of children grew up with a cell phone in their hand. That's a completely different reality and a different nervous system. Their nervous systems have been retuned for something else. They've been retuned to blend in so that their memories and personality will be on the cloud in the future. So the big discussion is, and should be all over the world, is where are we going, what are we doing, and why are we doing it based upon a few people's idea of what a human being should be.
It's really amazing what you're saying. Do you have any final thoughts?
Freedom of your mind and the liberation of the human condition, this is the high ground of the military-industrial complex and the New World Order. And if you do not, and people do not, address these issues, now you're not going to have free will. You're not going to have freedom. You're not going to have a right to rule and create a future that you want. This is, a lot of people have sacrificed to bring this information to the public a long time ago, and people have really put themselves out there because they know at this moment in our history, this is the crossroads of either the beginning and liberation of the human condition or the complete and total slavery of it. So I would suggest everybody start to examine it and take a real close look at it and start taking action from themselves. Don't expect any elected employee to do anything because they've failed miserably, totally, completely. Specifically, I'm talking about the United States. Take it upon the individual self to take control of their own reality, take full responsibility, and then move ahead. That's what I suggest. That's my leading party message for everybody.
Well, thank you very much, James Martinez, for a very interesting discussion. Well, listening to Mr. Martinez can only make us wonder how controlled all of our minds are right now. We're also connected to our screens. Is this the new form of brainwashing? Well, the original sin of torturing people and destroying thousands of lives was really never addressed. There were some families who were compensated, but the majority were not. And of course, the victims can never, ever be fully compensated. Now, this brings up the question that although the CIA says its MKUltra program no longer exists, what would stop it from using other inhumane techniques to reach a goal? It used biological warfare in the past and never really had to pay for it. What does that mean for us today? Are they in the business of creating germ warfare? It was said that the MKUltra program was so extensive that it even developed biological weapons in the form of aerosol sprays, and that all types of poisons and drugs were created, combined, and tested on humans. And that was then in the 1950s and 60s. What about now?
March 16th, 2018. The U.S. government's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, commonly known as DARPA, announces a bold initiative to develop what they call next-generation non-surgical neurotechnology. It is designed to allow the human brain to directly interface with machines.
We know that DARPA is exploring human-machine interfaces that include direct connections between the brain and outside systems. That's been from the beginning of DARPA's information technology mission, and it continues to this day. DARPA has created some of the most influential technologies of all time, things that we use and take for granted every day, including the project that became the internet. They've created self-driving cars, stealth technology, GPS that fits in your pocket. That's DARPA's specialty, to imagine the future and create it.
A new technology that is actually very much on the verge of being a reality that is being fielded is We could have a sensor maybe on the surface of our head, or maybe implanted somewhere in our body, in our brain, or something, that allows us to interact directly with our communications gear, our processing gear, our weapon systems, and so on. But now imagine we take that technology and we can control robots at a distance with it. Even fly drones. You put this sensor on and you think the right way, and you can increase the speed of the fan by thinking and controlling that thought with direct-to-mind or mind-machine interfacing. With that type of capability, you could control all sorts of buttons and mechanisms in equipment.
Mind-machine interfaces will have many applications in both civilian and military life. But there are those who believe that this same technology could also be used by DARPA as a new form of mind control. Like their counterparts at the CIA, DARPA-funded researchers have spent decades investigating how the human mind can be altered. In 1965, DARPA launched Project Pandora, which studied the possibility of using microwave radiation to control human behavior. The project reportedly ended in 1969, but DARPA's investigation of how machines can affect and possibly control the brain continues to this day.
750,000 dollars. That's how much the Olson family was compensated for the assassination of Frank Olson by the CIA back in 1975, which is ironic because it seems the only murder that was compensated and apologized for in this manner was the murder of a scientist who himself was guilty of creating bioweapons, responsible for the murder of many others. Well, in Canada alone, of the 300 victims who filed for compensation, 250 were turned down with the excuse of not having been affected badly enough, or for filing too late, or for the lack of medical records, which the CIA had conveniently destroyed. But these victims are only a fraction of those who were severely injured and killed by the similar scientific experiments on human beings without their knowledge and consent. Because in addition to these human guinea pigs and the some 7,000 U.S. soldiers used for these experiments, there were thousands more who paid the price for the projects approved by the American government. People in Korea and elsewhere who received the final product which resulted from these experiments. The most voiceless victims of the CIA's biological warfare were these non-Americans whose suffering didn't seem to be an area of concern, as they were citizens of the so-called enemy countries. You see, the most dangerous brainwashing method is not that which was done using LSD and other drugs and terror techniques, but the media propaganda that dictates to people every single day which lives should matter and which ones are simply all the expendables. Perhaps it's time for us to unplug ourselves from all the noise, from the screens, and give our minds time to process what is reality and what is a creation of cyberspace. Be able to discern the real from the created is the test of the day. And depending on how well we score, it can help determine if we can free our minds or simply behave like a puppet on a string, giving into the whims and directions of others on the web. Well, with that, it brings us to the end of this week's show, and we hope you will be joining us for our next Hidden Files. Until next time, I'm Marzia Hashemi for Hidden Files.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.